Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for coming. I'm Rina, and this is Madhvi, and we are an intersectional feminist podcast called Misinformed. So what we kind of like to do with all of our live recordings is we really want to use this platform to give the microphone to other women. So we'll be asking a series of questions and sort of having an open discussion. So please feel free to come up and grab the mic and share your experiences with us. The recording will be about an hour. So, you know, if you could silence your phones and maybe try not to get up or move around too much, that would be wonderful. So since we're here at Subcontinent, we're broadly going to be talking about the experiences of Asian women. As you can tell by looking at me, I'm not an Asian woman. But I will be help facilitating the discussion with Madhvi here, who is an expert on this subject. And this was kind of born out of the last live recording we did at PodFest, where we had two women who came up and talked about their experiences, Ohani and Anna, about being Asian women. So we're really keen to continue that conversation, and I'll hand the mic over to Madhvi.
Yeah, so at this other live podcast, basically we were talking about women and bodies, and Ohani came up and she was talking about how she was too dark and then her shape was all wrong. And then she said, basically, I'm a bad Asian woman. And I was like, ooh, that's a good title for a book or a podcast. And I know it's a really broad range, but we wanted to be as inclusive as possible to see sort of what the similarities and differences are as a continuation of that topic. And I, for one, have never met a good Asian woman, yet the stereotype persists and the tropes and the expectations persist, which is super annoying and frustrating and damaging and dangerous. And everyone from like my grandmother to my friends have not ever met these expectations. So I just thought this would be like a really nice space to talk about what it actually is like to be an Asian woman. We can give you prompts. Full disclosure, Rina and I are both very, very hungover today and we haven't slept much. We cannot make this work unless you come up here and give us content. But we'll give you prompts. And if a prompt doesn't speak to you, it's cool. You can just come up and take a mic and be like, I want to talk about, I don't know, my body or my sexuality or my grandmother, whatever. Together, or all of them together. That could also be interesting. But to start off with, I actually, since you started on the celebrations, this is really interesting because we had Eid and lots of other things. Frankly, I don't know. I'm not very big on religion, so I don't know what all those festivals are, but there are a lot of them. And women play an important role in these. So I was wondering if anyone wants to talk about religion. We're just going to go straight in there. Like they say, there's three topics you should never discuss among polite companies, like religion, politics, and sexuality. And those are basically broadly the things we want to discuss. But yeah, like how has religion sort of, or celebrations, you know, how have you experienced them? Or another thing that I've kind of noticed, because I'm originally from India and I follow Indian politics a little bit, is there seems to be a swing away from all the goddesses in the culture, because we've got a kind of hard right government there. There seems to be like a swing towards this sort of Ram cult and this toxic masculinity and the perfect man and male gods. And that's kind of interesting too. So if anyone wants to talk about that, about really, yes, come.
So do you want me to introduce myself first?
Yes, please. Okay.
I'm a Pakistani woman born and raised in a very religiously conservative society. I was married at the age of 18. And before I turned 25, I had four kids. It was largely a forced marriage, but I somehow, you know, I didn't have a choice. My kids were young, so I was a stay-at-home mother for about 12 years, after which my family, my parents and my siblings, who were sort of the only people who were sort of making me grounded into this kind of patriarchal structure, family, whatever you want to call it, they, in the meanwhile, sort of migrated to the United States. So I was like all alone by myself in a largely abusive marriage. Made it work because I didn't have a choice. Had four children, very little. But I tried to find my ways secretly, did an undergrad I remember my sister babysat my kids, and when I secretly went to, she only was three, and my mom were the two people who knew about that. Then, it took me quite a while. I enrolled myself in the university. Nobody was going to pay for my education, so I went to the public university called University of Karachi in Pakistan. The choice of subject, I decided to choose public administration, like the bureaucracy, because I kind of from the very beginning understood that all these kind of structures are, you know, they have to do something with politics. And the very ground level, the way politics works is through policy, whether it's policies related to the family or to motherhood, related to like parental leaves. These are like on the very intricate level how they sort of shape our lives, right? How the state sort of comes in and structures a life. That's where I started. I've never worked on gender. I have had like lots of questions from the academic community because, okay, I need to go on and then sort of tell what I do before
take
I end.
Time. We're into the story.
Okay, so I did my master's in public administration, and during that I was sort of very much valued at my institution in the university. I, for the first time in my life, knew people other than the family. There was a time in between when I did get associated with the religious organizations. I don't know if you've heard, they're like Tablighi Jamaat. So there was a time when I was with the Tablighi Jamaat wearing like the niqab. I did that for 2 years because I was like trying to search some purpose in my life beyond being just a mother, you know. I was searching for an identity. And the first thing that you come across is religious organizations within Pakistan because it's like the really grassroots things. But yeah, I was sort of experimenting. And then I also studied at the university. And the university sort of valued me more. I felt like more valued at the university. And they offered me to teach. I then taught at that university, University of Karachi, Department of Public Administration for about 7 years. But in the meanwhile, I was constantly trying to get out of Pakistan because I knew that if I stayed in that structure, I mean, it's just not about only gender. You need to remember Pakistan is it's a very, you know, developing nation in that sense. And it's like, regressing very fast from this so more economic perspective as well. And then when you talk about intersectionality, you know, when crises happen, the worst affected are the ones who are, you know, whose identities intersect in such ways that they become the worst affected. Like if you're a woman, but also not from a higher class, you're from middle class, and then you're also probably from maybe a minority ethnic community, you know, in a majority sort of majoritarian sort of system, you're the one first hit. And somehow I did belong to all these different intersectionalities. I do come from a minority community. My parents graduated from India, so we are like a small ethnic community called Maimans. They're It's still a small community, you know, considered as like still migrants from India, unfortunately. So although, I mean, I was born in Pakistan, but that how somehow, you know, and then, you know, the class identity and then also the gender identity. So these were like multiple reasons why I needed to escape. All these structures were sort of making it difficult for me. So I applied and applied to PhD programs across the world, but I didn't have the kind of education that would have enabled me access to those things. Second thing, I didn't have the money. So, you know, they're like, and then you're like Pakistani passport. Once I actually got into a US PhD program and they gave me partial funding, but then my visa was refused because, well, your parents are living in Pakistan and you probably are just going to immigrate. Finally, the German government decided to give me the Dart scholarship. And I came here to do my PhD. I studied for the PhD. I decided I'm going to look at Islamist organizations and their political impacts. And I chose to focus on far-right Islamist political party, which is active in anti-blasphemy politics in Pakistan during that time. And even now, that party is quite a sensation in terms of like volatile sort of activism. Anyway, so I have finished the PhD. I finished in 2021. Thank you. Then, I'm still trying to work my book. I mean, it's been 3 years. 2021, end of 2021, I finished the PhD. Then I was for 2 years at UCL for a postdoc. And now I'm back at Freie Universität, where I did my PhD from as a lecturer. And I'm teaching students diversity and intersectionality at workplace. And these are my students in business and economics department at FU. And they're coming from like different, because I teach in English. So I get students who come from Erasmus program and also other like students also from the German students who are willing to study in English. And the other courses that I teach around civil society activism, which is kind of my core areas of research. So that's my life.
You are amazing. I love you. How did you negotiate studying and working from this marriage and breaking out of this role? Was it okay or...
You know, that's a very difficult question, not because of the fact that it's hard to make it work in terms of like how much work you do. It's hard to make it work because of the mom guilt. It's really big thing, especially when we are raised in certain kind of sort of very patriarchal setup. We certain internalize the idea that parenting is my job, is a mother's job only. And that, I mean, those who are from the subcontinent know very well that I'm 45, so I'm still like, I would say, you're not a young, my kids are Gen Zs. So my oldest is 25 and my youngest is 20. So, and they're all in the universities right now. So you can imagine that is also a lot of work. And then I'm raising kids still in that society, right? Which is sort of enforcing. So for me, the problem wasn't how much hard work it is. It was more like how much of an emotional and psychological struggle that it is causing.
To take time for something that is not just a role that you're supposed to be playing.
Yeah, and then you about so say about this bad Asian women. Of course, I mean, but I sort of, you know, sort of developed a certain thick skin, which is helpful for me now in academia as well, is that, yeah, you keep, I was always like blamed. I remember whenever I was going back to Pakistan during my PhD, because when I was in Pakistan, I was still sort of protected from a lot of criticism around this bad woman because I was at the university. So even though Karachi University is not as elitist and, you know, there is a lot of class sort of dynamic around it. But in the end, you know, when you're hanging around people who are engaged in research, you do somewhat get like a support system in that sense. So I would say in the workplace, I was somewhat sheltered. But yeah, I mean, in the society, like, for example, in the neighborhood, I remember being told like, my kids would, when they go to neighbor's house, they'll be like, is your father cooking in the house, right? Is it your father who is doing the cleaning in the house, right? So they would tease my kids. And then, I mean, on the one hand, somehow I kind of maybe raised feminist daughters somehow without even trying to, because I know my daughter would come home and say, why would they have to say that? You know, she would resist that. But on the other, I feel like the force and the power of social conditioning is so strong that you can't like completely, you know, neutralize it. And then the other question also comes in about, you know, what you can offer. I mean, we do live in a very capitalist society, right? And even if it's a mom is going out and work and if she's not bringing in a lot of money, what's the point of going out? Why would you just stay at home and do what your job is supposed to be? So, and I wasn't bringing a lot of money because I was a precarious academic and I had absolutely more money. I was a student for most of the time. So that sort of also like kind of caused a certain kind of a value judgment in ways that, well, if I had perhaps chosen to do a business or, you know, gotten into some kind of career, which is like from the very start brings you a shitload of money. I don't know actually even that's possible in Pakistan anymore. But I mean, if I did that, it would have been maybe seen differently.
Yeah, there's so much to this story. There are a couple of things. Yeah, I think motherhood and the roles that we play are really interesting because I think a good Asian woman is always seen in a role like a good mother, a good wife, a good daughter. This idea of the emotional blackmail, I think, or this guilt. Because I grew up in London. I was born in London. And my mom, she lives in London. She's very independent and cool. But her friends, when they visit from Mumbai, for example, they say to her, oh, aren't you lonely that Madhvi's all the way in Berlin? Or like, you know, your kids, that you're living here in the house all by yourself. And she's like, no. But I think you also get the guilt as a child that you should be looking after your parents and being there. And then you get the guilt as a... I mean, there's a lot of guilt tripping, basically. Yes.
Well, I see it more as like, as society, we develop certain normative orientations. And whether, I mean, they are designed to control, to exert certain form of social control. Now, some of them exist more loosely as informal norms, like expectations of behaviors around certain roles. Others exist more as formal norms that are perhaps enforced through state, that you have to follow traffic rules. And I would say that the mere existence of certain expectations is not bad itself. The fact that certain expectations are inadvertently applied on certain people or certain identities, I would say, even because I do identify a woman identity, a gender identity, or a class identity, or a citizenship identity, whether you are a migrant or, you know, these different identities. That is where the problem lies. And that's where I think the intersectionality is like an important thing to study, because we all know that we all are, you know, being guilt-tripped in some or the other ways. That's not the complexity. That's not the question. The question is, who is being guilt-tripped more than the other? And why? And how I can stop it? And if we really believe in the ideas of equality, right, then what we would want to do is to equalize these differences somehow.
Guilt-trip the men.
Yeah, I mean, that would include somehow guilt-tripping. And I would say, if you really want to start, let's start with fatherhood.
Yes,
fatherhood.
Sorry.
Thanks so much for sharing your amazing story. Do you have any questions?
I'm curious, are your kids here with you? Did they come with you?
No, so I did leave all of them when I left Pakistan, but now actually all of them have also, like, there's one who's still in Pakistan, but both sons have moved to the U.S. because I was like on a mission to get them out of Pakistan. And my daughter has recently moved to Germany. So she's not in Berlin, but she's in Bremen. She's also doing. But all of them are international students like their mom was.
Congratulations. Yeah. That's great, great achievement.
Thank you, though, for really giving me the voice. I think it's a story I've been wanting to tell one day through a book, hopefully.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we will all read it. Does anyone want to talk about the roles that they are put into, guilt tripping or motherhood? Ah, go for it.
Hi.
Say your name.
Yes, I'm Shubhangi. I'm from India. And I've been in Germany now for 6 years. I am not a mother, but I have one and we have a close relationship. And we often talk about this guilt trip thing. And I'm so glad that you brought it up, because I'm often told that I don't feel it because I'm not present in the society, of course. I've left it. I visit twice a year, so I only feel it for 30 days at most in a year. And a big part of it is I'm the older child, like I have a younger brother. And when I came to Germany, I came as a student, and everyone's expectations was I will study, I will find like a nice boy to settle down with, and I will move back home and have babies and take care of everyone eventually. I think my parents didn't expect that because they know me quite well, but not the society. So they often hear back and hear from their friends and people, Shubhangi's still out there. Like, she didn't come back yet. Like, isn't her master's over by now? And like, how long is it taking? Is she ever going to graduate? I graduated 3 years ago, but I think they still think I'm studying, a lot of people. And like, my grandfather tells people I'm doing a PhD just so that he doesn't, like, I'm not, just so that he doesn't have to explain why I'm still not back. And I'm just working, but it's not enough, you know. It's like, what are the reasons? Like, she can just work in India. Like, why does she have to work? And I live in Delhi, or I was from Delhi. So there's enough opportunity. It's not like I'm running away. I'm upper middle class. We had enough privilege, let's say, to not feel the society's burden. So, like, what am I running from? Like, it doesn't make sense. And one thing is, like my mom would often get guilt-tripped, I think way more than my dad, about me being gone. Like, she didn't raise us well enough that we didn't want to come back and take care of them. And one thing she heard recently, which she shared with me, and I was so angry when she told me, was that a friend of a friend said to her, funny, you should just, like, think you only have one child now. Like, just forget that you have two because you barely see the other one.
Oh, my God.
And that's, we talk every second day. So it's not like we don't have a relationship. It's just, according to people, it's not enough. Like, I'm not there to take care of their everyday needs. So, which is, they're 50, 55. Like, they're not even older than that. So they should be able to do it. And they are. They're very independent, my parents. And they have a very nice social life. So, like, they're happy, I'm happy, and we're okay with it. But nobody lets them live with it. Like, why? Why are you okay? Like, don't you miss your kids? Like, how are you bad parents? Like, they just question them. And it's really just, I sometimes don't know what to say because I feel like we are in a bubble by ourselves. Like, also me and my parents, like, we understand each other, but nobody understands our dynamic somehow.
Yeah, it's disturbing to other people to see a different model and be like, there's another way of doing it. And that has to be wrong because my way is right.
Maybe? Yeah, like, I think they don't understand why they're okay with letting us have our independence. Mm-hmm. Or, like, why our parents are okay with us being so open-minded. Like, I have a German partner, and this for my parents has also been quite a challenge to discuss with their friends. For example, like, they would be called too open-minded. Like, they're okay with it, they've met him, but this is, like, so problematic to other people. And they're, I just feel like they often have to live with society's expectations. So we actually have two alternative realities, like the one that we know as family, like, together.
Yeah.
Like, they know what's happening in my life, and it's what we share with other people. So, like, people think I live in a VK. I don't. I live with my partner. But that is so bad. Like, living with a person without getting married, it's just like, we can't share. So when people ask me, what did you do on the weekend? I talk about my flatmate, Julia, who I haven't lived for 3 years with, but I still, like, make up stories. And it's, like, so, so weird to, like, fake all the time, like, have these two sort of realities. And yeah, I think if I don't do it, my parents would be guilt-tripped more. Or, like, my mom mostly.
Mm. So it will affect them in the society. Exactly. So you almost have to do it because you're not allowed to just say your truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just easier to lie. And that shouldn't be like that, I think. Yeah. Wow. So that's what came up to my mind when you talked about guilt tripping, that I just thought of, like, someone telling my mom, I just forget you have a child. It's just crazy that they don't really understand our dynamics. And it's so easy if it only matters if they're in front of you. And I think that's just not how it works. Like, there's so many people who migrate every year and live far away from their parents. And my brother, it doesn't even live with them. He also lives in India, but in a different city, and sees them maybe twice as much as I do, which is still not a lot, but it's not the same when it's I think also a son.
I was just going to say, do you feel like you get guilt tripped more because you're the girl and the caring aspect of, you know, looking after everyone's needs actually goes to you rather than your brother?
For sure. I think I first thought it was because I'm the older child or the elder child, and I get it because I should be more responsible, should be already thinking about my future and their future. But I start to realize it's still gender-based, even though I didn't grow up like that. Like, in our house, it wasn't so gendered. Like, I actually had way more freedom than my brother, I think, because I pushed it a bit further. But society still deals with it in the gender patriarchal way, of course. Like, he can live his life, he can still explore. But why am I still exploring?
It's so nice that, though, you can still be honest with your parents, because I think a lot of people also, if they move countries, they can't really also do that either. So that's actually quite...
Yeah, I think that's why I said I'm quite privileged that way. Like, at least I can share with those four people what's happening in my life. And that's quite nice.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Thank you so much for sharing. Yeah, there's so much there, isn't there? Like, there's often this, like, disconnect between the reality you live in and then the reality people that you know live in, and in different contexts. It's this code switching thing, actually. And I always thought that code switching was kind of a good skill to have. And then I was like, yeah, but it means that you have to hide parts of yourself in different contexts, which happens a lot. And then the other thing actually reminded me of, Anna, you were saying on our last podcast about, you know, once you're 50, you're past it. Because in the Philippines, no, they have this. You're 35 and you're past it. Like once you've had your kids and you've done all that, you're like, you're in the old ladies section. And then when you're young, you know, you have to go boom, boom, boom. Like you say, you have to study, then you have to get married, then you have to have kids. And it seems like, yeah, a little bit universal. Do you want to speak about that or something else at all?
I've got a lot to say.
Yeah, I mean, just say whatever you... You missed the bit where I said that Rina and I are both not really on it today. So we're relying on everyone else to just be awesome. We are relying on the labor of Asian women.
Like much of the world is relying on the labor of Asian women. Can I have some snaps for that?
Yes.
What do you want me to talk about? What was your first question on age?
Yeah, so she's like her parents are in their 50s and they're past it. They need their kids to go and care for them or something. But also, you can pick any topic.
Just one, I was just wanted to say I'm closer in age to your parents probably. And they love you, but they also love not having you around a lot. The same way that you probably feel about them, right? You love them, but it's great that you don't see them so much, right? I mean, that's great. So I'm Anna. I run an IG page. It started out as a podcast called Middle Me because I wanted to, I realized that my sexuality, my exploration of my sexuality very much ran with my age. So I'm a single mother. I lived in the Philippines. It's the only country in the world without divorce. And you can imagine what that frames or how that frames my experience, my personhood as a single mother. There's a hierarchy of single mothers. I'm the one who left the husband. Hey. I didn't wait for him to die. That's the one that's very high up on the hierarchy. Oh, she waited for him to die. No, I couldn't wait that long. So that very much framed my experience of motherhood, of what being a wife means. And also how to see myself. And it's also very paradoxical that the Philippines ranks very high on like gender equality indexes and all of that. But I always say the Filipina woman, go get a degree, you know, go ahead, go out and work, serve the European countries that need your labor. But the minute that she asserts her sexuality, her right to decide about her body, I always say, you know, the Filipino woman is empowered, except for matters of her heart and her vulva. Those things are regulated by the state, policed by the church, and enforced by my family and expectations of my family. And in Philippines, and much like many of our Asian cultures, the family is not just my mother, my father. It's my auntie, her cousin, my other cousin, the twice cousin removed. They all have an opinion about how I should live my life. So Middle Me was kind of like a big fuck you to all of that. Because finally, my kids grown up, I have a master's degree in sexuality. So I'm not just a journalist who writes about human trafficking, gender and intersectionality of gender, sexuality and human rights and incidentally smart. I always had to prove that, you know, like when you talk about sex and sexuality, it's nearly like you have to prove that, oh, I'm also smart. I am. I also have a master's degree to prove it. But I have to get to that place before I'm given the respect to speak about these things, to even say that I have a right to determine my own pleasure and what to do with my body. So that's where all of this is coming from in terms of Middle Me now, what that exploration has been like. It started off with single motherhood in my 20s, and now that I'm in my 40s, it's all about now what that means, where I can finally say that my identity, my body, my time are mine. Motherfucker. And I also wanted to say something about when I saw the today's meetup. I was like, oh my God, I have so much to say. So I also wanted to say something about being a Filipino woman. You know, my name is Anna. In the US, that's Anna. In Europe, it's Anna. It's a very common name in Germany. It's a very common name in Spanish-speaking countries. It's a very common name in the Philippines. That just to tell you that my name as it is doesn't have a certain citizenship or color to it. But when you see me, I'm a brown Filipino woman. I could be nothing else. I couldn't be possibly German. I couldn't possibly be American, even if I grew up there. I couldn't possibly be German, even if I, no matter how long I live here. But when you see me and my brown skin, depending on where in the world I am, in the Middle East, I'm like, oh, you're the maid. Are you here are you looking for domestic work? And people are surprised at how well I speak English. So also, this is not meant to offend anybody, but it is what it is, right? Okay, to the white man, I am a fantasy to be had. You Google Filipina girlfriend, and it's all about being this ideal girlfriend. What did I read in one? I was so disturbed when I was taking my master's degree because it said that me and my Vietnamese and Thai sisters, we were little brown fucking machines who run on rice. It was so disturbing because I had heard little brown fucking machines growing up. And that was already so disturbing to me. And then to hear it and to read it, it's another thing to see it also in words, right? So that was also quite disturbing. But that goes back the historical, the etymological. No, sorry, I don't know my graduate words anymore. It's been a while since I was in academia. But the historical root of that is because me, my Vietnamese sisters, my Thai sisters, we are fantasies for the white man to be had. For the white women, I'm labor to be paid. So I can take care of your children and you can have your career. Meanwhile, I will leave my own children behind. And to my family, I am someone to be controlled. I am never an individual and just recognized for who I can be. So what do we do? I'm not going to leave that, you know. I ain't leaving this shit the way it is. We've been doing this for a very long time. I mean, women, feminist movements, feminist men have been advocating for spaces like this for a very long time. And I do see improvements, little by little, even just having spaces like this. Or like my first few days in grad school, it was a pandemic, so we were all on Zoom. And I didn't realize that my classmates would be closer in the age of my kid who identifies as non-binary. They're closer in age to my kid than me. Oh my God. And they were all like, hi, I'm Madvi, I identify as lesbian. Hi, I'm so-and-so, I identify as non-binary. Hi, I'm so-and-so, I identify as queer. And this wasn't what I had grown up with yet, right? So I said, I'm Anna, identify as Angelina Jolie, and occasionally as Kate Blanchett. But what I had to say in that space was, being with these young people, I'm like, I was of this age where my mother, my grandmother had to fight for the things that I could already have. And I was so scared to still assert myself as much as I wanted to, as much as I can now, because I was so afraid that these hard-won freedoms that my mother, my grandmother had won for us would be taken away from me. If I said the wrong thing, if I spoke too much, if I took up too much space. But here were these other younger people, and I'm like, okay, yes. This is why we have to still keep on doing these things. This is why we have to still keep on talking. And I'm probably singing to the choir, but there'll be other people on this podcast listening. You know, this is why we respect pronouns. We ask what pronouns we want. This is why we don't assume naturally that I am the maid who comes here to scrub the toilet. There's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong is when that's all you can see me for, because I'm brown.
Thank you. And you speak so beautifully. I feel like you should be in charge. We're underqualified, but we.
The theme of today. Yeah. Just like we're like, oh, you're amazing.
Everyone who sits on this seat is amazing.
This seat is just—I don't know what it is. I'm gonna take it home. It's better than my vibrator.
Thank you.
Thank you, Anna. I find your IG inspiring, and I also do a lot of work around this. Like, I've also been thinking about like reclaiming the body and your erotic, and like what messages are we being fed? Also, like as Asian women, it's super interesting, yeah. And also voices, like to let your voice be heard. So if you are a bit resistant to letting your voice be heard, it is a practice. And there's a politics in it, and there's a power in it. And this is your chance to come to the mic and sit down and practice it if you have something to say. And I did introduce some really good topics, just if you need some prompts. But like I said, you could talk about... Yes, come.
This feels home.
It feels
yeah. Yeah, I think I should have been given a mic long back. It feels like...
Do you want to say your name and where you're from?
Okay. I'm Gunjan and I'm from India. Born and raised in Delhi, but like traveled all across, like in India basically. And then I moved here 5 years back. And why I moved was like that every time I was in India, like, and I was trying to make my space there, because I think the difference between... What happened, like, is that, like, that I was raised by a family which was very different to the society. So when I went into society, it was like, this doesn't match. This is not what I came, like, you know? And it was, like, so crazy that, like, they all started being like, oh, you don't belong here. You should be in Europe. That's what they kept saying. Every time, like, they met me, they were like, yeah, you don't belong here. I was like, okay, then bye. So I just left them and I'm here. So, but yeah, so this is how I came here. Like, but I came for studies, but now I'm just here. That's how it is. But what I wanted to talk about is it's kind of a mix of everything, like what you guys have been talking about. It's that I think the best part you could do to a woman is like to raise them in the same manner. Like that I was raised by really strong women. All of them were like really strong. And I just like feel blessed about it that I was in that family, because I never had this part of thinking that men and women are different till the time I got into college or like school, you know. In school also, like, it was not that bad. But in college, I was like, there is some difference which is happening because I don't understand what they're talking. I still don't understand. I don't know what they talk. But like mainly, which I was coming back to, that I was raised by my grandmom more like than my mom is there. Like, but they have like different roles. And my grandmom was illiterate, like she never knew how to read and write. But the only thing she had was practical mindset. And that was the best thing she did, is that she taught us that every time you feel that like something you know is right in your heart is right, then you go for it. Irrespective of fact like that what others are saying or what society is asking you or like your parents as well. Because the part like which I was coming in to lie to your parents or like to society to be there, and I was the first kid who grew up like and who's like openly posting about that I'm drinking, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And I didn't care much because like I had backed out by my grandmom. I was like, whatever happened, like I'm just going to say that grandmom said that I can do whatever which I feel right to me. And yeah, that backfired. That like for 8 months, my parents, like the entire family stopped talking to me because they were like, oh, we don't accept this. Like, and my cousins, they were just told that they should not talk to me. Otherwise, it's going to be a bad influence. And I was like, yeah, we will wait. we will wait for them to raise. Like, and that's what exactly happened. Like, because after 2 years or so, they started getting into it. Like, and my all aunts and everyone, they were just like, oh, can you just help them? How to drink or like not to do drink, like, or how to be with a boyfriend or like not. I was like, so what I felt was the best was that I am so happy that she could give me that compass of like understanding that like, okay, I know if it's right for me, it's right. And I just went with it everywhere. Till now, like it's same. It's not what others are telling me or like what expected. I just always see that like if this is what I feel, it's supposed to be done and feels good to me, I'm going for it. Yeah, so, and then coming to my mom, because that was my grandmom, she did like really good work. But my mom, we might not see eye to eye, like, because we have a very different personality, but like, I really adore like the way she has been all through her life, that she was athlete, like, and then she got married, she had us. She actually played entire role of being a mom, of like working, of doing everything. She did everything. And she kept telling me that if it's given, that if you don't want to do it, just get out. And I was like, okay. So I just never like felt that I have to do what she asked me. But basically now that she's retired, she found her own self again. In Corona time, she's like, oh, I think I'm just going to become good athlete again. And I was like, okay, if you want to. And now you see her, that 2 years back, I went there and I was doing powerlifting because I do that. And my dad comes to me and he's like, you are my son. You are my son. And I was like, no, we are still daughter. But like, it's okay if you are saying that. But then both of them got into like doing powerlifting together. And 6 months later, they are the one who's winning all the medals. It's like she lifts 107 kgs. And I'm just like, that was not a competition, but like, okay. but no, I see her, she's 64, and I see that how much energy and how much enthusiasm is still there, that it never gives me the idea that age is, you know, you can be defined by age. And I think I just don't feel that like at all, because I see them, I see all of them, like, because I grew up in a very big family. So I see all of them and I just like, being real is the only way I can navigate through my life. And that's what I choose all the time.
I mean, I think that's great. Being real and doing whatever feels good for you, like that's a great strong energy, which is why I really like Gunjan's energy.
I know.
Yeah, I know, you know. Does anyone else? We have time for one more person. Yes. Hi.
Hi, I'm Marina Reza. I've been in Berlin for 5 years almost. I was born in Bangladesh, but I grew up in New York. My family immigrated there when I was one. And yeah, there were so many threads that folks touched on. I don't really know what to focus on, except I think this topic of talking about like guilt tripping and also consequently shame.
Shame is big.
Oh my God. It's like the way that shame, like, and I was raised Muslim and I mean, there's so many things. So I feel like I'm on one end of the spectrum where I'm not in touch with my parents because of the sort of guilting and the shaming and the emotional whiplash of that. And then the recovery time of like, how do I find my own boundaries in terms of how much contact to be in. It's interesting. I also have an older sister. And like when I moved out of my parents' house, that was a big deal. And like they continued to lie to my relatives that I lived at home, you know, like because they had to maintain this image of like, we're good parents. You know, our kids want to stay at home. There's no reason why they would want to leave. Even when I moved to Berlin, I didn't tell my parents. I mean, I'm not in touch with them, but it's also hard, and I'm a writer, and I think having writing published and out in the world, and when it comes to writing about family and the ethics of like, what do you share? Like, what is yours to share? And talking about family history and secrets. I had an essay recently published, and I'm like, if my parents see this, I mean, I know they know how to Google. I don't know if they'll buy the book, but like, yes. It's...
I wrote one of those recently, and I wrote it, and I submitted it to one place and it was rejected and I was like relieved. It was like, ah, oh, shit, if someone Googles this one. It's interesting.
So it's an essay that was published in an anthology. So the anthology is called The Ordinary Chaos of Being Human. And it's an anthology of essays from, I would say, women or femmes who are raised in or around Islam, or have some sort of connection with Islam. And I think it will be out in the world in either May or June.
Yeah. That's great. And what was, can we ask about the essay? Yeah. You can also exercise your boundaries.
Yeah, I'm thinking a lot about like things that get passed down to us. So like stories, the kind of histories that get sanitized, or the versions that we get from our parents, and then the versions we get from other family members. And I'm also thinking about other things that get passed down to us, like habits. You know, just like I was raised with certain things where it was like, you know, if you go out late at night, your hair should be up, or else like the bad spirits will come on to you. Or like, you know, when you come home, you should cover up your knees or your arms because your dad is coming. You know, it's just like this kind of stuff around modesty. And but it's like, what is my mom's paranoia? What is religion? What is culture? Can you actually untangle these things? So the essay is kind of spirals. Not, I probably spiraled while I was writing it. But it's about like just kind of touching on these topics.
That's super interesting. Those are super interesting questions as well. Because, yeah, everything that is cultural is at some level like psychological. And, yeah, this all the boundaries are blurred somehow. Yeah.
Have you found a place for your...
No, I haven't submitted it ever again. Oh, no. Especially when you're writing... I think you're unboxing certain really deep-seated secrets that go back, and it's very interesting. I think that process is very interesting, yeah.
Thanks for having the space to talk about this
stuff.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
I'm going to wrap us up. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming and for listening to us. As we mentioned at the beginning, our podcast is called Misinformed. We release an episode every Sunday, every 2 weeks. So tomorrow, our next episode is coming out. You can find us on SoundCloud, Spotify, all of those places. We also have a newsletter that you can subscribe to. It's sort of where we share our show notes from the last episode, so you can, you know, fact check us that we're not lying. But we also share inspirations of like women who we find inspirational and just things around Berlin that we find inspirational. So you can find us on Substack. I would say the name of it, but I always get it wrong.
It's misinformed.substack.com. And also the one that we're releasing tomorrow is a preview of another live show we did on the Dead Lady Show, where we talked about Fulandevi here. And if you Google the Dead Lady Show, we talked about her life in relation to other Indian women's lives also, and that's out now. Also, I did want to say that this idea that was sparked about an anthology is still alive. So if you are here, I have a really professional piece of paper here where you can just like write down your name or the name of your favorite Asian writer, and we can somehow approach them and see if we can get an anthology going. And the anthology would be called Bad Asian Women, because I just think it's a great title. So yeah, come and put your name down there. And if you're an expert on anything or want to share your story or want to come onto the podcast, we are here to let women share their stories and their voices and their expertise. That's it, right?
Yes, that's it. Thank you so much, everyone.
There's food now.